Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New Heights Show on Education. This is your host, Kathy Woodring, and joining me is co-host Pamela Clark, founder-director of the New Heights Educational Group. First, I'd like to thank Kaden Behan for allowing me to co-host a couple shows. Her example and support are appreciated. The goals for these episodes is to develop an interest in history based on the passions and fortitude of the founders and the many people that have made America a unique, stimulating nation. Included will be the development of the founding documents and the structure of American government on the federal and state level. Please call or contact New Heights about any topics of interest that could be included with future episodes. Your input is essential and much appreciated. New Heights' phone number is 419-786-0247. Or email us at newheights@yahoo.com or visit our website at newheightseducation.org. You can call in to speak to me anytime during the show at 347-633-9225. Suggestions and questions are truly welcome. You can also chat with us live during any of the shows. Now Pamela will continue with some announcements.
Thanks. Excited about your show. You know how much I love history, so this is a treat for me too. So our direction on our email is newheightseducation@yahoo.com. And some announcements that we have today are, if you're online viewing the show, you can see the new logos and the new banner with all the hosts. That was created January 2014 from our graphic designer, Marina Klima. She is from Patras, Greece, and she's helped us now. She's on her third project, so we're very thankful for her talent. And then New Heights is offering its biweekly Enrichment Day co-op classes. The next class will be on February 14th from 1 to 3 p.m. They're all held at the Zion Lutheran Church in Defiance. They're not religious-based unless the families want there to be one. Parents and students are required to participate in these classes and help with planning them. Enrichment Day classes are still being planned, and we're still adding things to them depending on what people are interested in. So far, we are offering a reading time, art time, Irish dancing, karate, and are open to more suggestions. Students are invited to not only attend, but participate in instructing some of the classes, which the Irish dancing and karate, we do have two students teaching that right now. If you're interested in participating, volunteering, or tutoring, please contact us directly. We also recently started the new Student Leadership Council, which for many years we've played a pivotal role in the Student Advisory Group, which was open to kids of all ages, but now the student advisory group will be for ages 7 and up, up until the end of 8th grade, and then students 9th grade to into college will be able to participate in the Student Leadership Council. And we say up to 23 years old because of some of the awards, like the Congressional Award, you can still earn that until you're 23, so that's why we say up to 23. And if you want to learn more about that, you can contact us directly. And then something that just came to my attention this week is that the post-secondary education option is now being offered to homeschoolers. The Ohio Department of Education released the application information for homeschoolers to participate in the PSEO program. The Ohio legislature changed the law last year to allow homeschool students to receive funding from Ohio's post-secondary enrollment option. And that program pays for dual enrollment college courses at participating Ohio institutions of higher learning while they're still in high school. And any homeschooler that wishes to participate in this can contact us directly or go on education.ohio.gov, secondary information on there. There's enrollment forms and program information. And then to go with the American history that Kathy's going to be talking about, we do have a genealogy site. It's called Affordable Genealogy. Do you really just .weebly.com? Affordablegenealogy.weebly.com. So if you want to check that out, you can visit that. So now back to Kathy, who's going to introduce today's show.
Thank you, Pamela. This show starts with the settlement of colonial America, the immense sacrifices and trials of the first settlements, which will hopefully help in defining an appreciation of American history. We start with a timeline developed with information from history.com under 13 colonies heading. Mentioned is that traditionally, when we tell the story of colonial America, we are talking about the English colonies along the eastern seaboard. This source states that this story is incomplete. By the time Englishmen had begun to establish colonies in earnest, there were plenty of French, Spanish, Dutch, and even Russian colonial outposts on the American continent. But the story of the 13 colonies, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North and South Carolina, and Georgia is an important one. It was these colonies that came together to form English colonial expansion. 16th century England was a tumultuous place because England could make more money from selling wool than from selling food. Many of the nation's landowners were converting farmers' fields into pastures. Continues that this led to a food shortage, and at the same time, many agricultural workers lost their jobs. Also, the 16th century was the age of mercantilism, an extremely competitive economic philosophy that pushed European nations to acquire as many colonies as they could. As a result, for the most part, the English colonies in North America were business ventures. They provided an outlet for England's surplus population and, in some cases, more religious freedom than England did. But their primary purpose was to make money for their sponsors. In 1606, the tobacco colony started when King James I divided the Atlantic seaboard in two, giving the southern half to the London Company, which was later called the Virginia Company, and the northern half to the Plymouth Company. In 1607, the London Company sent men to Virginia. They reached the Chesapeake Bay in the spring of 1607 and headed about 60 miles up the James River, where they built a settlement they called Jamestown. In 1620, the Pilgrims arrived in Plymouth. In 1623, the Dorchester Company established a short-lived fishing colony on Cape Anne. And in 1632, the English crown granted 12 million acres of land at the top of the Chesapeake Bay, called the Massachusetts Bay Company, to Cecilius Calvert, the second Lord Baltimore. Calvert founded the Chesapeake Bay Company. In 1664, King James II gave the territory between New England and Virginia to his brother James, the Duke of York. In 1665, Connecticut and New Haven were formed by Puritans, who thought that Massachusetts was not pious enough. Puritans, who thought that Massachusetts was too restrictive, formed the colony of Rhode Island, where everyone, including Jews, enjoyed complete liberty and religious concernments. And in 1680, the king granted 45,000 square miles of land west of the Delaware River to William Penn, a Quaker who owned large swaths of land in Ireland. Penn's North American Holdings became the colony of Penn's Woods, or Pennsylvania. Lured by the fertile soil and the religious toleration that Penn promised, people migrated there from all over Europe. In 1690s, slavery played an important role in the development of the Carolina colony. By 1729, Carolina's slave trade split Carolina into North and South. In 1732, inspired by the need to build a buffer between South Carolina and Spanish settlements in Florida, the Englishman James Oglethorpe established the Georgia colony. In many ways, Georgia's development mirrored South Carolina's. By 1700, there were about 250,000 European and African settlers in North America's 13 English colonies. And by 1775, on the eve of Revolution, there were nearly 2.5 million settlers in North America. These colonists did not have much in common, but they were able to band together to fight for their independence. The basics have been touched on with this essay from History.com, and hopefully a further interest in history has been created. Now to the hardships, or the starving time, of the first Jamestown settlers, as addressed in Genealogical Gleanings com. In 1609, Captain John Smith needed to go back to England because he was severely burned by an accidental explosion of gunpowder. The Indians respected Smith, and Smith traded commodities with the Indian. The periods following Smith's departure was known as the Starving Time. The Light and Glory paper by Peter Marshall and David Manuet describes the starving time as follows. Thus did the Virginia colony enter the dark night of its soul, the time that would soon be known as starving time. All the livestock had been consumed, the hogs, sheep, goats, even a few horses, those that had come over on the last ships, every bit, even the hide themselves. Next went the dogs, cats, the rats, and once thrived on their corn, and any field mice they could find, or little snakes. But the hunger continued unabated and now became ravenous. They even dug up the roots of trees and bushes and gnawed on them, and every bit of shoe leather on the plantation. Every book cover, leather hinge, or strap or fitting was boiled and eaten. The colonists grew so weak that many, lacking the strength to move, froze to death in their beds, and still the hunger raged on. Nearly half of the 350 colonists alive in June 1610 died by the end of the summer. The period from 1609 to 16 is known historically as the Starving Time. However, the spell lasted from 1606 to 1612. Only a constant influx of supplies and colonists prevented the extinction of Jamestown. John Rolfe, who had begun growing tobacco in 1612, obtained seeds not from the Indians, but from the coveted Nicotiana tobacum strain grown in Trinidad in South America. Although Spain had placed a penalty of death upon anyone selling the prized strain to a non-Spaniard, Rolfe also discovered better ways to grow and cure the tobacco, perhaps through the aid of Pocahontas. Genealogical Gleanings com continues with the structure of society. The Jamestown colony was established as a communal society in which all settlers were required to work jointly together to provide for the community in the common store, as a whole rather than individually. As in most trials of this kind, many shirked their work and the people were not driven to be industrious, but rather the few who were hard working provided for the whole who shared the rewards of their labor. This is indicated by a quote from John Smith. As this time were most of our chiefest men either sick or discontented, the rest being in such despair as they would rather starve or rot with idleness than be persuaded to do anything for their own relief without constraint. By John Smith. Though the king had instructed that his communal arrangement continue for 5 years, Governor Dale, realizing that this plan was a failure, instructed that each colonist receive 3 acres of cleared land on which the colonist was to plant crops for their own private use. The more liberal plan was established by Martin's Hundred, where the colonists were allowed to work for 11 months for their own individual needs and 1 month for the common store, whereupon each colonist would pay a yearly tribute to the common store of 2.5 barrels of corn. Another good definition of the conditions of the settlers Jamestown endured is exemplified in the book, The 5,000-Year Leap by Cleon Skulskin. Skulskin states in his book that the settlers of Jamestown had been assigned the task of establishing an Anglo-Saxon foothold in the hot, humid, and totally hostile wilderness of what we now call Virginia. It was in Jamestown that the communal economics were experimentally tried out by these European immigrants, who found them to be worse than Plato had described them. Eventually, it was in Jamestown that a system of free enterprise principles began to filter up through the years of starving time to impress the settlers, those dynamic ideas which were later refined and developed in Adam Smith's famous book, The Wealth of Nations. All About History.org gives mention that colonial life in America was very difficult for the hopeful settlers who came to expect to escape poverty, persecution, and gain religious freedom. Under the hardships, it's mentioned that the settlers did not know how to live in the rugged wilderness and had no experience in preparing for the harsh, bitter cold winters. They faced many hardships, such as knowing little about how to hunt for game or how to plant crops on this new soil. As a result, many succumbed to malnutrition and diseases. In Massachusetts, the Plymouth settlers spent most of their first winter, 1620-21, on board the Mayflower. It took a great deal of time to clear the land and erect adequate shelters. The following winter, the Pilgrims were able to live on land, but it was under extremely primitive conditions. Many were sick, and all were hungry. Nearly one quarter of them died before a ship from England brought fresh supplies. They relied heavily on their faith and spent much time in prayer. In time, the colonists learned how to live in the wilderness through trial and error, and with the help of an English-speaking warrior named Squanto and the Wampanoag chief, Massasoit. By the 1700s, small cities and towns were established. The colonists slowly developed their own customs and lifestyles. Eventually, they began to feel that this new land was now their true home. Life in colonial America centered on the family. Most of the work and play took place at home in the very earliest years of the settlements, which included schooling, learning a craft or trade, and worship. The All About History Review continues with mention that large families were common and necessary in colonial days. Everyone was needed to get all the work done. The father was considered the head of the family. He made all the family decisions and earned a living by farming and other crafts such as blacksmithing. Women worked in the home, raising children, preparing meals, making clothes, preserving food for winter, fetching water and scrubbing clothes. They made their own candles, soaps, and most other basic items. None of this was easy and often done without the proper tools. Much of their dawn-to-dusk work was merely for day-to-day survival. After concerns of survival came the colonists' desires and struggles to form a fair and democratic government. The tyranny that some of them came from made this a priority. Those who survived had a very difficult life, but they had determination and steadfast faith that this would be a great land. Many died before their time, but for most of them, their faith in God and the Bible is what helped them preserve. They were grateful to God for sending the Indians who taught them how to survive in this new land. It was through their faith and determination that America was born a free, democratic, and Christian nation. This is from All About History, Under Colonial Life in America. Videos also illustrate the passions and viewpoints of colonial citizens. These videos can be found at some videos, funwithhistory.com, under Movies and Pilgrims. This essay is very condensed, and visiting the sites mentioned provides extensive coverage of nearly any history subject. More can be found about Vermont, tobacco, Gohanas on Fun with History, and some of what they mention under Virginia, tobacco, and Pocahontas is that Pocahontas was sent to the Northern Neck by her father to hide her from the English, and in 1613, she was treacherously lured aboard ship for the price of a copper kettle by Chief Jabawas, king of the Potawatomis, and his wife. Later, following the massacre of 1622, Captain Madison, using the pretense of visiting a white settler that lived in the Indian town of Jabawas, massacred all of the Indians in that town that did not flee and captured Pocahontas and was persuaded to go aboard the ship Treasurer, captained by Captain Samuel Argall, and was taken to Jamestown, where she was held captive in order to secure the ransom of an Englishman who were prisoners of Powhatan. Pocahontas was now a young woman of 17 and married to a warrior by the name of Kokum, Powhatan's captain. Pocahontas was held about a year, and during the period of captivity, Pocahontas was wooed and won by John Rolfe, a leading citizen of Jamestown and a widower who was 10 years older than Pocahontas. Pocahontas was actually her nickname and meant frisky or playful one. Her birth name, Pocahontas, probably knew a great deal about tobacco, though the Indian women grew the food and the men grew tobacco. Pocahontas had an insatiable curiosity, probably tended to roam into the back areas of the village where tobacco was grown. During the captivity of Pocahontas, she received daily Bible lessons and eventually changed her name to Rebecca when she was baptized, the first convert of her tribe. She was treated kindly by the Jamestown settlers, some of whom could recall her and her friends performing cartwheels down the Jamestown streets when she was still a girl. It would appear that Kokum died before 1614 and that Pocahontas was unmarried when in 1614 Pocahontas married James Rolfe, and April 15th, the little Anglican church at Jamestown with the approval of Powhatan. He did not attend the wedding. He did, however, send her uncle, Oshiko, to the wedding and two of his sons. The marriage of John Rolfe and Pocahontas brought about 8 years of peace with the Indians, years that were used to perfect the cash crop that would save Jamestown. The tobacco was something that Jamestown relied on to prosper. And King James was angered by Rolfe's marriage to Pocahontas because Rolfe, a mere commoner, had married into the native royalty and therefore had married very much outside his own class.
Not like the movie.
There is a lot of information here, and there's a lot to find on the videos and many fun facts that help to describe what had happened during the first settlers. And some of it's not so fun, but the Great Awakening. There's many videos can be found at Fun with History and under the subheading Movies and Pilgrims. And next Friday, please join us for Sadia Ijaz's show at 6 p.m. Saturday for Kaden Behan's show at 6 p.m. and Sunday for my next show titled The Great Awakening. Thanks for listening and have a great night.